Welcome to the American Churchman Podcast, brought to you by TruthScript. We are dedicated to inspiring Christian men to embrace their divine calling, exploring a range of topics such as theology, culture, politics, economics, and offering insight in discussions and guidance on those things. Today, we're going to be talking about the hurricane cleanup, as well as an article posted on TruthScript about singleness. I'm your host, John Harris, and today my co-host is my brother, David. Matthew is not with us because Matthew is riding out a hurricane tonight. So he's in Florida. You can pray for him. I told him, because he wanted to be here, I said, why don't you focus on what you have coming towards you? It's fine. So Dr. Bob says it's Gordon Sanchez. I don't know if that identity has been revealed, but it sounds like someone's doxing you.
It's alleged. Everything is alleged.
So David is also the president of TruthScript, and I don't think we've talked a lot. I had Matthew on, and so he wasn't there, but you were there about the retreat. Maybe we should start with that, and we'll get back into the attributes of God discussion when Matthew returns next week. But instead of doing that, why don't we talk about the weekend, not last weekend, but the weekend before that up in the Adirondacks. You were there, David, so what did you think?
I was there. I thought it went really well. It was a really, really good time. I look forward to this every single year. The venue, I just look forward to being at the venue, period. It's the perfect time to be in the Adirondack Mountains. It's beautiful. It's crisp at night. You sit around the fire. You have really interesting conversations with guys. Really, it's become all over the country. We had a guy from, I think, Greece, who I don't know if I think he lives here, but we had people come up from Georgia. I think somebody came up from Florida. So just guys from all over the country, guys from, a number of different Protestant traditions. We had Presbyterians there, Baptists, non-denominational folks, even people who would be probably more charismatic-y, I guess, but really good unity, robust singing together and a number of really great messages from Dr. Richard Vargas, from you, from A.D. Robles, from
Edwin Ramirez.
Edwin Ramirez.
Your own father.
And my own father. Yeah. That's... I was running around. I missed a lot of the speaking because I was putting out little fires here and there. But great time. Topic, Dr. Vargas talked about the history of fundamentalism and why you don't need to be ashamed to be called a fundamentalist, among other things. But yeah, great time.
The scale of the event is pretty good, because when you have depending on the year, between 50 and 100 guys, this year it was 70 guys, there's a camaraderie you can have. You can actually talk to people and get to know them, and you start recognizing the same people year after year, and you start to become familiar with their names and their stories. And I know that some good relationships have formed from it, but it's also pretty accessible. And I think in the wake of the Steve Lawson thing, especially, there's guys who would go to these big conferences that are now realizing, man, we don't actually know these people. They're in the green room. They can come out on stage for a few minutes and even tear it up on the pulpit. But did they actually have virtue and character? Are they people worth emulating? It's somewhat questionable now. And that's the case when your life is mostly hidden. And the retreats aren't like that. We're all out there. You're going to see the flaws. And I wanted to actually show people, speaking of flaws. So Andrew, the guy, we actually had this whole thing recorded. We're going to be posting the links at TruthScript. So follow TruthScript on X or on Facebook. Are those the only two places? We have Instagram, right?
We have Instagram, yeah. Hopefully that should be, we've connected the account, so there should be more Instagram posts very soon.
Well, yeah, I'm one of those three. If you follow us, then you will get the update, and there will be videos of the talk. So I got the tape from Andrew today of the A.D. Robles talk, which was really good. He was talking about friends and enemies, and I'll see if I can post that later tonight or tomorrow. But this is how it began.
Hey, all right. So I always like to say whenever I talk somewhere that I'm not preaching today, unlike Okay. It's okay. It's okay.
Just hitting the fan.
It right was John. Now. It's okay.
Yeah. So I figured I would just show the the it's real. It's raw. There's no embellishment or I don't know, fine editing. We didn't take it out. We just left it in. I think Andrew thought it was better.
Anyone who is speaking there, you get to rub shoulders with them. You know, one-on-one you get to eat, you get to have share meals with them, you know, potentially go on a hike or kayak out on the lake or go fishing. I think the way it was put several times is there's no green room here. There's no place where the people who are speaking are separated from the people who are attending. It's a very, you know, everybody's kind of having the same experience. So yeah, great time. Highly, highly recommend.
Well, if you have questions or comments as we go through the podcast, please let us know. We're streaming right now on Rumble, X, YouTube, and Facebook. And you can ask questions, I think, on all of those except Rumble. So Matt says John's green room is the campfire. Matt actually was the one who did our music, Matt Borish, and did a good job. And greetings from Albuquerque, says Ray.
Ray is Spanish for king.
Is that why El Rey is the king? Is that
that's right? Yep, that's okay. Correct.
So the more you know.
Yeah, if you habla, these are things that you know.
Gordon Sanchez on the supposedly conservative podcast, bunch of grifters, sad, very sad. wow, traitors. Okay. I don't know if it's FEMA or us. I think Betty's calling us traitors. Hi from Florida. I hope you're safe down there. I was looking at some of the Weather Channel stuff and it looks like this is going to get the intensity will go down. I think it's category 5 right now, but the geographic area will be larger than it is right now. And it looks like it's already half the state of Florida. So this is going to be intense and it'll be interesting to see what happens. Mary asked, when will registration be open for next year for the fundamentals men's conference? Good question. Probably by the end of this year. So by like December, I'm thinking maybe November. There's just a bunch of other things we're doing. One of them is a church history conference that we're going to have next April. So stay tuned for that. There's more announcements coming. Let's get to the topic at hand, David. You were in, where were you actually? You have a slideshow, I know.
Yeah. Let me actually share a map really quick. I taught.
I don't think it's on there. I don't know where it went.
Well, I turned it off. So let me put it back on again. Let me just share
Okay.
map for a second. If we're seeing.
Let me get rid of AD.
By AD. Okay. So let me know if this is moving. Is this moving?
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll zoom out a little bit. So here is let me put the terrain on. So yeah, see that's a nice map. You can tell all the mountains and hills and everything. So Tennessee River Valley is up here. The hurricane when it came up, this is as far as I understand, it kind of the reason why it was so bad where it hit is kind of veered off this way a little bit. And the expectation was for it to go more towards Nashville quicker. But instead it kind of, because there was another front that had just come through. Also, the front had saturated all the ground. It rained a lot in this area, the Smoky Mountains and the Blue Ridge Mountains. And you'll see all these things pop up because roads are out everywhere. So this area, Asheville is about 1,000 feet higher than the surrounding region. So it's like 1,000 feet higher than Atlanta, than Knoxville. So it's higher up, but all these little towns, you can kind of tell with the topography, there's streams and creeks and rivers everywhere. The two main rivers are the French Broad River and the, I'm going to switch over to this one, the French Broad River and the Pigeon River. So this is Newport, Tennessee. This is a picture that I took on Saturday. That's a really actually like large RV, just full of debris. The water in the Pigeon River exceeded, at least in the particular area that we were, 27 feet. So that's 27 feet higher than its normal where it's normally flowing. So we went to about five towns. This is a group I linked up with a church in Knoxville. This is the town of Marshall. This is where I spent most of the day. It's an idyllic town. It's one of the most beautiful towns I think I've seen. Like, I saw the pictures beforehand. The whole town is kind of like half a mile strip, you know, but it just has a very old classic town, and it had really been revitalized, and it was kind of trendy. So this is it now. This is a picture that I took. I mean, obviously the picture is not as good. You have to zoom in to see some of the details. You can see there's some damage on the side. There's debris, but if you zoom in, you see the train tracks just completely taken off. There was a train running like four times a week into that town. It may never run again. This is Main Street. So this is kind of typical in the towns. But the first story of most buildings, like most of the first story, because you got to figure 27 feet, was just completely, was just mud, basically. And the mud is still there. The water receded, the mud stayed behind. So most everything.
Where's the asphalt?
It all just got wiped away. Pretty much. There's no asphalt anymore. Still there. It's covered in mud because mud covers absolutely everything. You can't see in this picture. I didn't take a ton of pictures because I was working and I wasn't thinking of taking pictures. So I just have a few. I have a few videos too. But further on where that Jeep is coming in, there's several houses there and they're just gone. There's nothing there. They just were completely wiped away. So Marshall, actually, several people did die in Marshall. I don't know how many. There's still so many people missing. We don't really know. You know, it's going to be a while before we know the exact numbers of how many people are gone. I'm just going to go back to this one really quick. But what happened was, this was like 8 o'clock in the morning when there was an alert that went out. Basically, if you need oxygen, if you have any kind of like medical reliability on anything, go out and get it. And then like 20 minutes later, another emergency broadcast came in that said shelter in place. So a lot of people stayed put because it was like, okay, we're supposed to shelter, but you can't shelter if you're on the river. And this water came so fast, you know, you might have had a few minutes. So a lot of people just got washed away, you know, within seconds or minutes at best. So Marshall wasn't as bad as other towns. Like Chimney Rock is gone for the most part. There's a little of the main stretch that's still there, but so much road is washed out. You know, in some places like miles of road just completely gone. And I guess sort of, I've been trying to sort of process, here, I'll stop sharing this. I've been trying to process sort of what we saw on Saturday. So me and a friend went up. We spent about like probably 12 hours in the mountains. We went to one town and Hot Springs. And Hot Springs was very tight. It's a tiny town. It's like, I don't know, maybe a quarter of a mile, the main street. And the bridge held. So people have been able to move in and out of that town, but it's pretty much ruined. I mean, like, big sections of road washed away, buildings, you know, completely filled up with mud. And this mud is toxic because the Asheville sewage system like failed, and that all went into the sewage of like 115,000 people, just went straight into the river. So it's in the mud. The stench was horrible. I mean, it smelled like feces. I wound up in an old mill that had been converted into sort of like an office building / apartment complex. And I was just shoveling this mud out and like cutting out drywall for the day. But yeah, it's going to be, one of the reasons why I wanted to go, just because as soon as it happened, I was in New York for the retreat. I flew back to Tennessee and I just wanted to get up. I just wanted to help, you know. A lot of people have been texting me and calling me and saying like, what can I do? What can I do? There's been, I think, a lot of urgency because people have felt like there hasn't been a response, especially from the feds. So, a few things that I noticed. So I didn't see, there were things that I've seen online that I did not see. So I did not see, you know, bodies strewn all over the place and the smell of like death in the air. But there may be places where that's happened. Just it's not in those like five towns that I was in. Those may be more remote areas. I'm not sure. I do know they found bodies around where I was, but I didn't see or experience that. There were no feds anywhere. I didn't see even a whisper of FEMA or the National Guard or any state, nothing. In fact, the only authorities I saw at any point, and this is across five towns, were some cops pulled up in an ATV once and just, you know, said like, hey, you guys good? You need anything? And then they took off. Other than that, it was a 100% volunteer effort. And it actually, I was trying to think of what to compare it to. And the thing that stuck out to me the most was 9/12. So if you remember the day after 9/11, everybody was sort of like your friend that day. You know, there was just this sort of common camaraderie. Political differences didn't matter. Like we were sort of all Americans. This is the most I've ever seen that spirit. And partially because like these towns, this isn't within the influence of Asheville, and Asheville's not a red place. Like Asheville's pretty blue. And even the town that I was in was, like I said, very trendy. I mean, there's one church. The church is looking for a pastor. It's a Presbyterian church downtown. So the Christian influence isn't super big there. There's like crystal shops and magic shops and things like that. So it struck me as like, oh, this is a very like progressive town. If you're from New York, like Woodstock, if you're from California, like Santa Monica. That's kind of the vibe that I got. But the people who had organized, and they were extremely organized, because this town is at the bottom of a hill. And then like at the top of the hill, there's sort of the corporate stretch of the town. And then at the bottom is the actual town, like the riverfront. And they weren't allowing any vehicles down. Instead, they would shuttle people. Volunteers, because volunteers have poured in from every corner of the country to come help here. There's more volunteers than, there's a lot of help. Not everyone has a helicopter. That's kind of the issue, but there's plenty of people on the ground, like shoveling out stuff and, supplies. People are bringing supplies like crazy. So that hasn't really been a huge issue. But they had a shuttle system to bring people down and bring them back up. It was super organized. They had all the PPE because, again, this mud is extremely toxic. So, we had full body suits on, respirators, gloves. I sort of shed like one by one because it was so hot shoveling the stuff out. One thing I noticed was even without any like outside help, there was outside help, but it was all private. It's all just citizens, mostly from Tennessee and North Carolina. Pretty much all of the infrastructure were like red state people. So there was a sign that I saw at one point it said, free massage for volunteers. So people who have like come in to help, like if you go to my massage shop, I'll give you a free massage. And I had this moment. I'm like, this is really cool that people are, nobody's fighting. It's very obvious that some people here are very left, some people are very right, but everyone is like pitching in, working together and trying to help one another to help these people who have lost everything. But if you zoom out a little bit and think about it, all of the infrastructure is like a guy pulls up in a Trump hat and he's got, like a side by side, a bunch of guys with camo and chainsaws. Without red state America, people would be struggling a lot more. It's like red state America that has come in to save the day, here. And that's not to say that like people who are more progressive were not, because I was volunteering next to this guy who had, he was very obviously like a hippie, but pretty much all the infrastructure were red state people.
I wonder if the lack of response from FEMA is swaying any of these so-called, you said hippie, but more progressive. What, Hicklib? I don't know. They're
Hicklib,
living,
yeah, that would be a good.
Like if, because I saw there was a guy on X who made a video just crying about like he was going to vote for Harris, and now he's not because of the lack of response from FEMA. Like that became his one issue, and I think in those moments that does become your issue. Like all the other issues start fading in the background, and you're like, my town, my life. My people.
Yeah. I did notice. So I had a lot of good conversations with people throughout the day. some, you know, fairly extended because you're working next to people, breaking bread with them. Nobody wanted FEMA there, like universally. Nobody wants FEMA. In fact, people, almost everybody I encountered was making a, would make a crack about it. Like, at least we don't have FEMA here. So it's kind of like, on one hand, because, you know, a lot of people are saying, where's FEMA? Where's FEMA? And it's a good question. Where is FEMA? Because that's our, that's our money that pays for FEMA. So where are they? Where they could at least just give the money back to us or give the money back to these people, you know? But even if they were around, nobody wants them. You know, and I talked to some people who, which by the way, another thing that I've seen a lot online is that they're taking supplies. So I did hear directly from one person who did like, who's been coordinating bringing supplies in for, you know, now we're going on 2 weeks, a week and a half, that he did see FEMA come in and take supplies directly. So it is happening. They are taking stuff. They're confiscating, I guess would be the word. Where are they taking them? I don't know. Nobody seems to know. My guess would be they're taking it to Asheville because Asheville is where you have a ton of people. Again, this is the red state infrastructure. So the red state infrastructure is taking care of all these outlying areas because these guys, it's honestly it almost made me tear up throughout the entire day because these guys that you just, you know, the guy that you just pass with, basically the guy that the Gospel Coalition likes to slam every time they put a piece out. The guy that Christianity Today, you know, would have nothing to do with because he's a Christian nationalist, whatever it is. Those are the people who have saved the day. Those are the people who have, I mean, guys have like missed a week and a half of work. You know, the people have just, one guy has just been like paying out his own money, you know, and he's finally asked for donations. But people have sacrificed like an incredible amount. But it's, you know, it's your quote unquote ugly Americans. It's like the backwoods redneck hillbilly guys who sit in the back of the Baptist church pew on Sunday morning, who are the heroes here. They're the ones who have done everything. And some of the, you know, the ones who strike it big and have their own helicopters, they've been doing a little bit more, or they've been able to do a little bit more. Although, you know, there have been instances there's at least one instance where somebody was like threatened with arrest. And,
yeah. We talked about that last week.
And then the weird thing lately has been, there's at least two incidences of like planes just coming in and like hovering over the staging areas and like messing everything up and then flying off. So
that's the weirdest thing I saw. Yeah. Like two or three of those on X and I'm like, what in the world is that? Like, that's the weirdest thing to me. How do we ensure that these people can vote? Mary asks. Yeah. I don't know if polling places would be even set up. I don't know how that would happen.
I mean, if Asheville doesn't vote, I don't know if that's the worst thing in the world, but I don't know. The same question is going to be with this hurricane in Tampa. You know, is that going to, does it matter? That could take us into the whole conspiracy, you know, theory thing, which is funny because I've had people have been calling me, you know, because I was up there and without any exceptions, it seems that the predominant belief now is that the government can control the weather and they have like engineered the hurricanes into, I've heard this multiple times. I've heard it from people here in Tennessee, like all over the place. And, you know, I thought a lot, I don't believe that. I don't think that the government is capable of doing that just because of on an energy level. I guess nothing would surprise me anymore, but I don't know. It's a little too much for me. But at the same time, in the past, I might have looked at those people and thought, you guys are crazy, you guys are insane. But this is the outflowing of COVID. If you want to understand this situation, then you look to COVID. People were told for 2 years, trust me, trust me, trust me, trust me, while they were being lied to constantly by every facet of their society, every institution constantly just lied to them about everything. So there is no trust at all. And nobody wants the federal government around. Nobody wants the experts around. They want to deal with it themselves because they only believe what they can see with their own eyes.
Hmm.
You know, which is sort of the story of the failure of the federal government here is their absolute lack of trust. Nobody trusts them.
Yeah. Well, Brandon says, and he's not the only one to say it in the live chat, word is they are redistributing to illegals the resources. And I wouldn't even put it past them, to be honest.
Well, they would have to be. If they're taking them back to Asheville, then they are, because that's where the illegals would be, right? It's a, that's a blue city. There's plenty of illegals there. And yeah, the illegals, again, the illegals don't have the infrastructure to deal with this stuff. They're just going to be waiting for handouts. So that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Yeah. It's surreal to see the neglect of people who are citizens who probably have families going back generations in favor of migrants who just got here, who probably didn't even follow a legal pathway, but somehow our tax money is going to help them. It's very angering. And that's really what divides, I think, people on this election is not just on that issue, but on every issue. It's, well, just about every issue. It's kind of like this battle between the people who have been here versus new arrivals who may not even have followed a legal process. And then those who would be their allies, who would see them as political pawns to help them advance their political agenda. And this is just playing right into it. All right. Well, there's a lot of questions. I know I had a few other questions. People, get your questions in now, because we're going to move on to another topic. But you got there somehow, so the roads must be like okay, at least from the direction that you were traveling.
No, the road there's basically one road. As far as I understand, so there's two major interstates that go from the Tennessee River Valley to Asheville. One of them comes down from Johnson City. It's Interstate 26. Interstate 26 got wiped out in Irwin, Tennessee. So Irwin, Tennessee is near Johnson City. It's on the other side of the mountains, just sort of within the mountains. And there's a big industrial park there on the river. And that industrial park just got wiped out. And several people died because they were inside working. And they tried to leave when it was too late, and they drowned trying to escape. So Irwin's in bad shape, and the Interstate 26 was washed out in Irwin. Right now they're projecting probably, I think they were saying sometime late next year it'll be open again. So that's the main thoroughfare between Johnson City and Asheville, coming from the north. Coming from the west, so from Knoxville to Asheville, is Interstate 40. Interstate 40 is an extremely important route because a lot of freight that's going between the rest of the country, but you know, Nashville and beyond basically would be going through Interstate 40. So that means the only roads, there's back roads, there's probably some ATV roads and things like that. But as far as I know, there's really just one road that is semi-passable, like all the way from Tennessee into North Carolina. I don't know about the North Carolina side, but at least from Tennessee. So now when you try to go on back roads, so when you try to like go up, because this is hauler country. So there's all these tiny haulers are, should explain what a hauler is. Hauler is a tiny valley between two hills, and people tend to live in the haulers. And generally, it's a big difference in the south, in Appalachia from the north. In Appalachia, generally, they're associated more with poverty. So poorer people often live in the haulers as opposed to living in town. Whereas up north, it usually is flipped. A lot of the time, the wealthier people live out of town and the poorer people live in town. It's just sort of an aside. But that means that people up these haulers, a lot of them already might be hovering along the poverty line. I mean, I see trailers around here that look almost like a third world country. I mean, people are living really like hand to mouth in some of these areas, and some of them live way, way back, you know. And if you had tumbling water coming through your holler and it washed you out, I mean, it may be a very long time before we even know, and may have not even left very much to assess. You know, there may be some pieces of a trailer or of an old home, but So all that to say is the roots, the just moving, that becomes one of the big issues because there are now no interstates between Knoxville and Asheville that you can just take. And that's going to be at least until March 2025. That's what they're saying now. It'll probably be later than that.
I was thinking about those people because they're in a really bad spot given this is October and it's going to be getting cold. It probably already is dipping into the 40s at night.
Yep.
And what do you do now? You have nothing. A lot of those people don't live in towns. They're more clannish, and I don't know. I don't know what that looks like. I mean, it's just, I do have that fear that people are going to be starving this winter and we might not even know about it up in the hills. I mean, as far as even like trying to hunt to sustain yourself and that kind of thing, I don't know what kind of damage this did to the wildlife in the area. I'm sure that it probably killed a lot of wildlife as well as
a lot of fish,
livestock. Yeah, I'm sure a lot of fish are dead.
A lot of fish. There's a lot of dead fish. I don't know about deer. There was a clip that was circulating of like four or five bears on the top of a tree before the flash flooding even started. Like they knew it was coming. So I mean, animals usually move to higher ground, but I mean, over the good news is like again, the people who have poured into here and the people who already live there, they're taking care of business. Like they're figuring it out. My faith in like, if I'll put it this way, if you want your faith in like the traditional concept of America, you know, as sort of the, you know, Protestant work ethic, pull yourself up, work together, we're a team, come on down and volunteer because your faith in that America will absolutely be restored. It's pretty incredible.
Well, it didn't look like there was a lot of people in the pictures you took. So you said there's a lot of volunteers, but
yeah, I was taking mostly from like from the other side. I can.
There's a question here: is anyone on the ground positing climate change as the culprit?
I mean, people are probably. It's ironic. There really are two. And we could talk about this for a second, but there really are like these two, you either kind of run to this side or you run to this side. If you're progressive, well, this is Republicans' fault because, you know, cause they don't want to deal with climate change. And if you're on the right, the government is creating and sending out hurricanes. So, which my favorite one is like the government created the hurricane and it sent it to Spruce Pine. Cause like Spruce Pine is this town that has like very special quartz that's used in like,
oh, right. They wanted the minerals. Like,
they want the land. So they sent the hurricane into, I'm like, man, that is wild. I don't understand how they're capable of doing that. Not capable of like holding a Boeing together. Like this is so confusing. How is it both? But you know that, and that's why I, even when I'm like discussing it with people, I say like, it's probably good to have a limiting factor because if you do run to an extreme immediately, because the temptation now is to run to the sort of the most wild explanation. I get it. It's hard not to think this way at this point. But what does that do? Well, it kind of takes our ability, our power to do anything about it. And because how do you fight how do you oppose a government that can whip up hurricanes and send them at you? Like you're hopeless. You can't do anything, you know, that like they can, oh, you know, they got away from us. We'll send a tornado after them. I think it has a way of kind of shutting down, almost like shutting down dissent, because it's like, well, there's nothing we can do. They're so powerful. Yeah. And they're not. I really don't think they are, because they can't even handle a cleanup. They can't even handle a storm cleanup. The story of this, like from a political standpoint, is that the United States government decided that it was going to prioritize literally anybody else in the world over its own people living in the mountains of North Carolina and Tennessee. Anybody who just walks over the border will set you up for life. We'll make sure you have, I can go on, but that really is the story of, that's the political story here.
Vanna Mahler says, I blame the sun, which has been shooting historic solar flares right now. That's a wild theory. The sun could be behind it. It's possible. It's possible. There's another question here. Are the news stations reporting
locally? Sure, yes. Yeah.
The local news that is there, I guess. Yeah.
No, right now, I mean, every news station, and again, you have to keep this in mind with, this was true with the last hurricane. It's true with this hurricane, the one that's coming into Tampa. Nobody watches cable news anymore. Nobody cares. So this is the only time anybody cares. So they are going to make an absolute circus show out of any hurricane that comes, because it's, you know, it's ratings. They really get a lot of viewership. They're making a ton of advertising money, I think, through these storms, which, you know, it probably would have been better to pay a little closer attention to the last one. And who knows what's going to happen with this one. But there's definitely a huge incentive to rile everybody up as much as possible.
You're talking about local news?
I'm talking about all of the above, but especially the major networks. Local news, you know, you're gonna tend to get, I think, more accurate information locally. But really, like, the winners here have been like Facebook groups. That's how people are getting connected. That's how people volunteer. They find a Facebook group. Yeah. They go to a Baptist church somewhere, and you know.
Yeah, Banner Muller also makes a good point about cloud seeding, and that is something that happens. The images online or the videos though of hey, did you see that wave pulsate through the storm? And like you think about that though for a minute. Like, that, we're not talking about cloud seeding, right? That's different. Cloud seeding is when a plane, what do they release? Crystals or something? They release stuff
like microparticles or something.
Yeah, and then the moisture globs onto it, and it produces rain. But this is, you know, the theories that are out there right now is like, oh, they directed the whole path of this, and they wanted to like get these certain specific areas. They were trying to take out red state America, and now they're doing it again because look, it's going into Florida, and that's a red state. And I'm definitely skeptical of all that. I think sound waves is the explanation. They're saying that you can use sound waves to do this somehow. And I'm just thinking, like, what kind of level of sound waves you would need, and what kind of a bullhorn, like, and then, you know, on top of that, like, what are the other effects? Like, wouldn't we see like other effects of these sound waves? Like, there'd be more evidence other than like, look at this blurry radar screen that it changes colors. Like, wouldn't animals' eardrums be bursted or something? Like, something else would be going on. And then there's never an explanation as far as like, and how exactly does that direct the hurricane? Like show me, because hurricanes, like storm systems, respond to low and high pressure. So this is sound waves. So I'm trying to think through like how that is going to correspond. You know, how does that create a lower or a high pressure area for the storm to respond to?
And can they only do it like in the Gulf? Is that the only place they can do it? Like, could they send one to like Lebanon and Israel, like, or Russia? Like, why don't they send hurricanes to Russia?
Right. They should be sending hurricanes to all the enemies, right? Exactly. Actually, that's a good idea. That's a great idea. Like, instead of spending $400 billion on Ukraine, just send a hurricane, you know?
And like, if you get discouraged about how like big it, man, you got some sound waves. You can move that thing.
You can just move it. Just move it out of the way. All right.
I'm not mocking. We're joking, but like, I understand why I find myself kind of drifting in that direction too. Because I'm just like, oh, what's the truth? What's the truth? It's because there's no institutional trust. We have no trust in any of our institutions that they're telling us anything remotely true. So I don't blame you if your mind goes that direction. But yeah, you know, have a little bit.
TSSL is saying the government the altered weather during Vietnam. I think that's probably cloud seeding though, which is different.
Cloud seeding is definitely a thing. I mean, they flooded Dubai recently, I think.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That's the thing. Like, when they've done it, it hasn't really worked out very well. Like, it's been kind of a, like, where there tends to be, that was the whole thing with COVID. When we mess with these natural processes that are like way out of our control, it tends to not go well. It, you know, it doesn't tend to work very well. That seems to be the.
That's cloud seeding specifically. Just be careful. That's what I would say. Be careful. Yeah, don't trust the government. Absolutely. Be skeptical at least. You've lived through enough to know that that's a wise path. But, don't just buy into every theory that doesn't really have evidence and there's not really circumstantial evidence. There's no explanation for how the mechanism works to do that. So just be careful. I think it was Marjorie Taylor Greene went online and was saying that the government absolutely can control weather. And I'm just like, oh, that doesn't help right now.
I think the result is inaction. More than
right. Yeah, the effect of it is bad. It's the same with the QAnon stuff. The effect of that was all bad, in my opinion. Because what did that do? It says, well, there's a plan in place. It's bigger than you. And then people spent all their efforts trying to figure out what the code was and how to break it so they knew what was coming, instead of actually doing the work of getting people elected, wielding power, in building businesses, you know, constructive things. Instead, you're just sitting around waiting for the TV or the, in this case, the internet to tell you, you know, what the next step is. And, you know, there's so many hours wasted watching people who do that kind of thing. And it just bothers me. I know stories from the QAnon stuff of people who just got sucked in and it just became an obsession. And it's the same. It can be the same with this. Think of constructive things you can actually do with the scale of your life and go do it, whether that's running for office, starting a business,
or throwing some generators on your truck and driving to North Carolina.
It could be playing with your grandchildren. That's better than watching all this stuff. Okay. Let's try to shift gears. Everyone's weighing in on this.
I have to
show this one. I'm sorry. There's literally a story of the Bible about a Jew
controlling
the weather. Wake up, people.
I know exactly what story that is.
It's Jesus. There's
well played. That was good.
I think you win the best comment. You award, absolutely yellow win. Moth. That's really good. All right. Okay, what are we doing? Oh yes, I forgot what podcast I'm even on. All right, let's talk about
singleness.
Yeah, singleness. I don't even know how to transition that. Let me pull it up.
If you're single, then
get married. All right.
Well, you may have more time to be able to dedicate to.
Here's the front page of TrueScript. Like, if people want to donate, I didn't say this at the beginning, but they can scroll to the bottom. And there's a little donate tab. It's very small, but other links says donate. Click on that. It is a 501c3. And, you know, even with this last retreat, we charged cost. So, you know, that's how people can afford to come to these things. It's not very expensive. But that means that TrueScript is the one that's paying the honorariums and some of the travel costs and that kind of thing. And so your donations help us do events like this because, we realize that a lot of people don't have money right now. And we want to be able to give access to people who don't have the resources to get to some of these big conferences. And so thank you for all those who have donated.
Absolutely.
All right. Is singleness the ideal? What the church should say about marriage today? Michael Clary.
Yes. So this piece starts out very, very directly. Historically speaking, singleness in the modern world is a novelty, like many other young people. And then he goes into his story about how he started out single.
I've noticed a lot of people seem to start out single. I think I even started out single.
I also started out single. Yeah.
My baby, like, who was just born, started out single too. Seems like it's the state that everyone starts at. So the question is, how do you go from that to getting married for many of you out there who are still single and are looking for that? But some people don't actually get married, right? Jesus is one of them. He did. That wasn't part of his purpose. Let's keep it to the piece. While modernity is quite different in many respects than ancient times, one thing remains: the potential for loneliness of modern singleness looms large and cannot be fully cured by church life. That's a really great point.
Yeah.
I've heard that so many times that, like, you know, the church should be able to fulfill those longings. You go to church and you find alternative parents or brothers, sisters, whatever. And that, because you're part of this heavenly family, that, you know, even the vacuum left by not having a spouse and not having children should be filled by the church. And obviously the church can help with those things. There's no doubt that having friends that are on the same spiritual plane as you and can encourage you spiritually help, but it doesn't fill the whole gap. It's not an alternative. It's a lie. I think people have bought into a lie. I know the Gospel Coalition puts out a number of articles, especially LGBTQ type stuff.
I just searched the Gospel Coalition singleness.
Oh, did you?
Listen to some of the, so, the key to, here's one piece, the key to companionship for singles. Another one is how to serve single parent families well. Another one is homemaking is for singles too. Another one, promote marriage and dignify singleness by prioritizing God's mission. So there's been this very intentional.
Can't load the Gospel Coalition. Yeah, interesting.
They probably blocked you. They blocked me too. there's been this very, very intentional promotion of singleness as it's never explicitly said as the ideal, but that's basically what you get when you read. And I've read a number of these pieces.
Yeah, like you're godly or if you're single or something.
Yeah, and when I was 19, I believed that. You know, I wanted to be a missionary. I wanted to go to seminary and be a missionary and be, you know, sort of a combination of like Hudson Taylor and Indiana Jones. And I thought, you know, a wife would hold me back, would hold me down. And, you know, but look what Paul wrote in 1 Corinthians 7. I think you're correct. I think really it really has had nothing to do. It's not like, it's not in a Catholic way. Like you serve the church. Really, this push has been an LGBT.
Yeah.
Push.
It's a mechanism to accommodate LGBT people or people who think that that's what they are. He says under the heading Modern Culture and the Church's Mandate that culture has a tendency to highlight all the ways marriage can go wrong and by extension praise all the ways singleness, hookup culture, etc. can go right. To combat this, the modern church must promote this celibate and celebrate, sorry, the ways marriage and family can go right. One writer observes that American pastors paint a bleak anti-marriage picture of marriage. He cites several examples of well-known pastors and authors telling marital horror stories that made people think twice before considering marriage. In response to this, one man comments, "I personally never heard a positive public exhortation to the young to pursue marriage in any church or college ministry ever." I actually have. Yeah. I remember at Grace Community Church, John MacArthur's church in 2011 or so, 2010 maybe. I remember basically the youth pastor, I don't know what they call them, the college career pastors, chiding everyone for putting off marriage. And I almost thought he went the opposite direction, maybe a little much, like get off the fence. But, you know, it's needed for some people. Like, what are you waiting for? You don't want to rush into an ill-conceived marriage. At the same time, though, you don't want to be putting it off because you can't find perfection.
Yeah.
And I think maybe what helps is having your goals set straight of what you're looking for in a marriage, what you want your life to be about, and then finding someone who complements that. And once you see that, you knowing that they're not perfect, just like you're not perfect, you end up, they fit into an overall plan and goal. You're not like looking to them to be your fulfillment of every whim and desire that you have. That will go south really quick. But you're looking at them more as a means to glorifying God and having a fruitful life and obeying the dominion mandate and, you know, all the things. So
he kind of gets into 1 Corinthians 7 a bit, which, you know, that would be the, I guess, the proof text for promoting singleness sort of as an ideal. But that same passage, you could also use to promote slavery as an ideal because only a few verses on, he says, basically live as you're called. And he includes slaves and masters. So his overall point is not, you know, this particular thing is you know, you should be this or you should be that. It's more that you actually, you know, you can serve Christ, you can serve God exactly where you are now. So if you are married, then you serve God as you're married. If you're a slave, you serve God as a slave. Yeah. If you're a master, but the point is that you serve God. It's not that you find this ideal thing that somehow is the formula to, you know, achieving a more godly state. You don't get extra godly points for being one of these particular things.
Yeah, I get a kick out of the gymnastics people go through to try to support different doctrines, like complementarianism is another one where I thought before, like especially the eternal functional subordination guys, like you could use all the arguments that they use and apply them to slavery and have like a super pro-slavery argument and none of those guys would accept any of that, but they're literally built that,
and it's verses, you know, away. It's like just a few verses away, but
yeah,
you will take one hermeneutic and you will apply. It's the same with when it comes to men's and women's roles, because people will say like, the husband, he needs to, you know, I can hear it in many sermons, he's got to love his wife. You have to be willing to lay down your life. But then it says a couple of, when it says like, and she should respect him. Suddenly it's like, it's just, that's different. It's got a different kind of thing. And you'll see these different, it really is just cultural influence that will find its way in and will make it cloudy or just make it inconsistent, make the hermeneutic inconsistent in its application.
He says that he talks about these misunderstandings. So the third one is marriage is a risk. The reason some marriages are simply so horrible that both spouses wish they had never gotten married, yet the potential pain of obedience is never a legitimate excuse for disobedience. Yes, we live in a fallen world, but the facts remain that marriage is the normative vocation for nearly all Christians and the primary theater of Christian sanctification. I mean, and today I think that is true more so than it was in the past, perhaps. I mean, it's always been the case, though, that you could marry someone thinking they're one way and then find out, oh no, you know, there is something shielded from you. If you do your due diligence if you're actually observing someone in multiple scenarios and you're not just infatuated, but you're getting good advice and you're trying to be, you're trying to transcend your own feelings on those things. Hopefully you catch those things. You should be able to with wisdom, but there are people I know who just, like, things went south and, you know, it surprised me, but I'm an outsider. I'm not in the marriage. And I know there's people you're probably thinking of too, that we both know. And I don't know, like even in those circumstances, sometimes it's like, you know, I mean, that happens, but it is the minority, I think, as far as, I'm not saying like a lot of marriages do end in divorce, but I'm saying Christians who actually like were trying to do their due diligence, it's the minority. And then when that does happen, like your job in that circumstance is just to still do the same thing that you were doing before. Be faithful to God and he'll guide you through it. And that may end up meaning that, yeah, you know, there's a divorce that ends up taking place. Maybe you even initiate it because there's grounds for it, or maybe the other person divorces you and, you know, that's not the way you wanted your life to go. I mean, those circumstances obviously arise, but that's everything in life. There's always risks that are taken no matter what. And I believe that if you are wise, if you're relying on God, if you're applying the principles that Proverbs lays down on these things, that at the very least you minimize that kind of risk a whole lot. And if not, you know, almost eliminate it. But like I said, there are situations where you marry someone and then later, you know, something changes later on, but you can't let that be the reason you don't get married. That's his point.
He gets at the end of the last two paragraphs there, when he's talking about natural family and shared ancestry. So he's making a case that actually the natural family, mom, dad, kids, not that you can't have, you know, grandparents involved, different, you know, different people involved.
Friendsgiving, you know.
Friends, but there's a cohesion that is promoted by that situation, and that really is something that he doesn't really get into this, but that is a very Western, it is a Christian / Western almost anomaly, right? Most of the rest of the world does tend to be a bit more communal, right? There is more. I'll usually think of like, I've spent a lot of time around Latinos. They're very frequently will be, especially groups that like will come over now, multiple generations, people who are not related necessarily, all living in the same house. And so what often will happen is you'll lack a cohesion. People don't necessarily have a shared identity. They have a general shared identity, but it's more either an ethnic one or a cultural one. It's not a familial one. Whereas marriage, kids, family unit, it's why we generally live the way that we do. We generally have two parents and kids in a house. And we're trying to maintain that. That's one of the political realities that we face now, is it's getting harder and harder to maintain that way of life. But it's a way of life that's promoted because of the family structure, from a man, a woman, and their kids living together as a family.
No, Martin Luther came up with that.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. That is a narrative that's out there.
I did not know that.
Oh, no? No, Martin Luther like invented the modern family. And what? I can't. Yeah, I know. I bet if I looked it up real quick, I'd come up with websites. Luther.
That's okay. We can, somebody can write a piece on that. And...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It comes up. Oh, you just have to Google it. Yeah, I never really paid much attention to it, but all right. A bit more on Paul's singleness. Despite these things, Paul's singleness still prevails in the minds of many. Okay, so you already kind of talked about this, to be honest. Yeah. Like 1 Corinthians 7 is often, I think people read way too much into it. It's really what you said too. So if you want to know more about Michael Clary's excellent job parsing that out, go to truthscript.com, check out the article. And this is actually pretty thorough. Five things single should consider. It is a very thorough treatment. First, make most of your singleness. Second, have faith that God is a good father who gives good gifts to his children. That's a hard one when you're lonely and single. Third, pursue the virtues of fatherhood or motherhood. And fourth, urge churches and pastors to honor and celebrate the goodness of marriage. And lastly, some fill their single years with travel, career advancement, and hobbies. Others, however, have their singleness, they serve the kingdom of God in greater ways. Singles have more time, more money, more emotional and mental capacity to devote to the kingdom. Don't waste it. All good points. Definitely.
He does make, he does, he goes, he almost goes a step further. Like, I don't think I really ever read anybody go, like, where he goes when he says, basically, in the church, even in the church is not a replacement for the family.
Right.
Which, you know, I've said many times, like, well, my church family, because for some people, it really does end up being that because they don't have anybody else. That is a thing that happens. But it can't deliberately serve.
Yeah, it's a close approximation, or not even close. It's an approximation. It's a close approximation. It's not a replacement. It can't be. It's not possible, you know. Like my wife lost her mother last year, about a year ago. Like right now is a very challenging time for our family because as the weather changes, those memories come. And are there going to be other women in her life that can be motherly to her? Yes, I'm sure there's some we haven't even met yet. Are any of them going to be her mom? No. No, that there always will be a hole there. And I think it's the same thing. God designed men and women to have spouses and to get married, to have kids. That's the normative. And, you know, you need to pursue that. You need to, I think, what does it say in Proverbs? You know, he who finds a wife finds a good thing. There is a finding to this. You can't. You don't want to just sit still. You want to be somewhat proactive, but also rely on God, both of those things simultaneously.
Yeah. And there doesn't need to be, I mean, I was trying to think of like, I was trying to think back to my single days. I started dating my wife when I was 22. I got married when I was 24. So I really only had like, I don't know, 5 years of, you know, kind of like pursuing girls and being interested and, you know, having little relationships here and there before I was in a committed one that led to marriage. But the first, I remember very, very, I remember vividly the big change right before I did start dating my wife was I just started praying very intentionally, Lord, I don't want to be single. But if that's, you know, where you want me to be right now, just show me, you know, show me the particular work that you have for me that I can only accomplish as a single man. And I then was sort of like, the impression that I got, not in like a weird way, but was, who do you know? Like what girls are in your life right now? You should consider them first, you know, don't create this sort of platonic ideal and like, just look for her and see where, who do you know now and go from there. And, you know, the intentionality, and getting over, you know, getting over shyness, girls do like a man to fulfill his role, which is to be direct. And, you know, it is okay to ask a girl to go on a date with you, you know, to go get cheeseburgers and milkshakes. That's okay. I've actually defended that book quite a bit, but, then Joshua Harris went ahead and, you know, stabbed all the other Harrises in the back.
Joshua and Kamala, we don't talk about.
A lot of people blamed that book, I Kissed Dating Goodbye, I think, for ruining their His issue was Joshua Harris's issue was formalism. He had this formula that he thought this is the, you know, if you follow this formula, it will work. And it had that, it wasn't a formula. It was principles. Yeah. If he would have stuck to the principles, not everything that he even wrote in that book was horrible. You know, just the idea of like, hey, date with intention. You know, it doesn't matter what you call it. You don't have to call it courting. You can call it whatever you want, but just be intentional about it. You know, don't mess with her heart. Don't fool around. Be a man. But then we found out he was a gay man. But oh well. I know that's not proven, but I'm waiting. It's at some point it will come out.
It's not? I thought it will. Then
he's always kind of a good.
He went to like a.
He does kind of set off the gaydar.
No, but he went to. Well, he was at like a gay pride march, wasn't he?
Yeah. I don't think he claims to be gay, though.
He just was in solidarity. He was an ally. Huh. Yeah, the whole thing's suspicious, though. He's not remarried. Well, anyway, that's Josh Harris. That's a different Harris. I need to give a shout out to Church Search, by the way. I haven't really mentioned them, but they helped create TruthScript's Church Search feature. If you go to truthscript.com, you can, by the way, I should say, you can still add your church if you are interested in that on the Church Finder. Yeah. On the Church Finder, looking for a church, click here. So that'll give you the map. But if you want to enter your church, click on the Church Finder. And I guess we got to take that Fundamentals Conference tab down.
Yeah. But also, I would add, if you want to get involved specifically in flood relief for East Tennessee, Western North Carolina, then feel free to send TruthScript an email. I will do my best to try to connect you with people, whether it is you want to donate actual physical things or funds or your own time. Shoot us an email and I will do my best to connect you. I have some contacts in the area now, and I've been trying to do that over the last week and a half.
All right. Well, let's end the podcast. Thanks for joining us, everyone. Until next time, God bless.
This October, Tanger invites you to shop pink and save lives. Your donation of $10 or more to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation helps fuel innovative research that brings us closer to a cure. It also unlocks exclusive savings from brands like Coach, Crocs, Columbia Factory Store, and more to shop all month long. Join us as we mark 30 years of advancing research and empowering hope. Donate and access your exclusive savings today at Tanger.com.